Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Welcome back to Smart Beauty. Today I'm delighted to be chatting with Abby Cleave. She is an industry powerhouse, managing director of SBC Skincare, SkinSense, and most famously UltraSun Sun Care. And the latter she has been building for the last 28 years. What started with £300 buying telephone directories and cold calling pharmacies, because this was back in the day when we didn't have the internet. She's since grown it into a brand that is sold internationally and has featured on QVC and presented by Abby herself for over two decades. So this lady really knows her stuff, and I can't wait to dive into our chat with her. What I love about Abby is just how laid back she is and her leadership style. I think a lot of people associate people in Abby's position with a certain kind of ruthlessness or see them as having a bit of a hard-nosed edge. But I think with Abby, she's managed to bypass that. And I think the fact that a lot of her staff have stayed with her for over a decade is case in point. She just is such a genuinely lovely person and so passionate about what she does. And she markets her products and speaks to her customers with real integrity, which I think can sadly often be lacking in today's cut and thrust world of beauty marketing. But I feel like Abby has managed to successfully circumnavigate all of that and has remained unequivocally herself. I think she's a pretty cool lady. She describes herself as a business hippie and, like I say, has kept some team members on for nearly three decades. I think I would like to work with her if I ever wanted to go back in-house. She sounds like the dream boss. Our conversation talks about maintaining that excitement for your business that you had on day one, turning rejection into opportunity, and building something that really aligns with your values, which I think Abby is such a great example of. So I hope you enjoy our chat. Abby, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Lovely to have you on as a guest. Now, there's a thing that I hear often when it comes to relationships, actually, called like never stop dating your spouse. But I think your business motto kind of resonates, where you say live every day in business as if it's your first, which I feel is similar in a business sense. How does that philosophy translate when you look back on your career?
Well, I think that anybody setting out in business, whether it's slightly accidental, whether it's been planned for years, you've got such enthusiasm and excitement and the kind of what if and here we go moment in your life. Mm. And it's scary, but it's really exciting. And I think very sadly that as days go on and years, you know, months turn into years, it can be very easy for it to become to wear quite heavy on you. And I really genuinely try to have in my tummy and in my heart and in my brain that remembering that excitement, that passion, because on day one in any business, you're there, you've set yourself up, you might be a desk in your bedroom, it could be anywhere, but you're in that mindset. And I find that's a really great space to start every single day, because every day in business is quite exciting. You never quite know what's going to happen and who you're going to meet and how that's going to transpire. Maybe not in the next week or two, but maybe in months or years to come. So I genuinely try to hold that moment in my head every single day of how exciting it is, what we are doing, what is our mission. And of course, we have good days and bad days, we all do. But if you start each day in that way, it really helps. It helps your mental space. We talk so much more now about how we're feeling and how we are as people in our work lives. And I realize that that's got me through. It's been 28 years now, and that has got me through every single one of those days of 28 years is genuinely going, okay, I love what I do. I love the independence. I love the decision making. I love my colleagues and working with my teams. So let's remember that and just give that even just a moment of the day to set the rest of the day. And it has helped me no end, Viola.
You can imagine. And as you know, I'm building a business myself with Smart Beauty. And I always think, having been not 28 years like yourself, just a year, so I've got a long way to go. But I just, in the early days, I was like, I just need to get to this point and then I'll be stable. And then I just need to, as long as I just get to this point, then I'll be okay. But maybe stability is a bit overrated. Maybe you need that. You need things to be slightly up in the air to kind of see pathways that you might not have taken. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I agree. You know those Reebok things used for exercise that are wobbly, those little platforms that people
Yes.
stand on because it engages your core and keeps all your muscles working. It's a bit like that in business. I think stability is massively overrated. And we all need to sleep at night, but we'll come to
Oh,
that.
for
But I
sure.
do think that being able to constantly be pivoting on what is needed is really exciting. It keeps your brain working. It keeps you engaged and working with your business. So I agree with you. And to be honest, if it was only stability, you and I would probably be employed in jobs. If that's all we were looking for every day to be very predictable and to know, then we would never have taken that decision. And I realize there's something about me and you and countless other people out there that need, crave, hunger for, get excited by that unknown and turning things into this positive outcome for our businesses and our worlds. And that's not to be discredited. That's a really powerful force. It does mean you're going to have some rocky roads and you're going to wobble and have to rebalance a few times and even get off your little wobbly board and get back on again. That's all good. That's all part of it. But you are engaging all of those sinews and muscles that perhaps wouldn't have been engaged in a more traditional career path.
And people talk about to that point, sort of, I don't know, it's not about the hustle. You need to get out of hustle mode and stop being in survival mode. But do you think, I think there's a middle ground, I think there's a kind of sort of, getting slightly uncomfortable without being, having to put out fires every 5 minutes.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, at the very early stages, you don't see the fires coming. As we both know, there are things like, oh, I never knew that because you're not a legal expert, an HR expert, a health and safety, you're not all of those things on day one. And you learn as you go. And I think having that open mind, open spirit, being ready to wobble on your board a bit, as new challenges are thrown at you, is quite an exciting thing. And I agree with you completely. There is a space between all out hustle, no sleep, black coffee, kind of very sort of 80s, 90s feeling of what setting up your own business is, and kind of zen-like state. Somewhere in between there is a scale that is more comfortable and more survivable and more sustainable. And we need to just keep walking between those paths. There are days genuinely where I do 22-hour days just because I need to, and that's what's needed. And then there are other days when I can be a bit more focused, have maybe a shorter day, and probably more a powerful sort of mental day. And it's, I don't dine out or take any sort of, I don't need to be that victim to my business. I think I've managed, some of my team actually gave me some feedback recently where they've said that I can detach at times emotionally, and that's another skill that I've learned over the years. That was not there at the beginning. At the beginning, everything was, on the edge. I was either crying, laughing, hysterical, or drinking wine, one of the above. But now I've managed to find a way where I can just step back and be a bit more patient. Maybe that's age or experience, I don't know, but it means it's really comfortable and I probably make better decisions.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. I think for me, I've learned that, it's just for me, being polite and having manners at all times, no matter who you're talking to, how they're talking to you, but it's just not matching somebody else's energy. It's being very kind of polite and respectful to everyone. I think that's a way that you can detach emotionally, and actually it puts you in a more powerful position, doesn't it?
It does. It allows you a little tiny bit of space to think, which is a mistake that I certainly had made in the early days of not allowing myself that time to think and going with sort of all out, almost over enthusiasm and over gratitude. And that's not to say that I'm sitting here and not grateful for people around me and the people who influence me. I very much am. But it's just having that little breathing space and remembering who you are, sort of cemented in that, is really important. And it's really important for consistency, which helps those around you as you start to, whether it's you're working with people through a freelance model or you start to take on team or whatever way that you interact with colleagues, it's really important that they feel grounded with you as well and quite safe with you, and that you're consistent. But to have some really surrounded, but I think I've got about 100 people in the teams, and I think there are probably about 15 who have done more than 18 years with me, and that's such a blessing. What a joy. You can imagine our stories go way back to the crazy days of packing on our knees to where we are now. So, and
That's
sometimes when new people join, they're sort of a bit agog at that,
yeah.
because it's hard with a smaller company to keep people and make sure there's progression and excitement for them and their career too.
Well, it's really interesting you say that because I saw a TikTok with Emma Greed, who was chatting to Stephen Bartlett, and it was just, and I feel like they did her dirty with that edit, to be honest. But she was saying how, the people that you start with at 10K aren't going to get you to 100K, and the people that, get you to 100K aren't going to get you to 1 million. And I wish I'd made some cuts sooner. And it could have been taken completely out of context, but there's no reason why people that you start with can't stay with you if you're developing them, if you're helping them to grow, and you're bringing
Well,
up.
I figure if I can grow and develop, anyone can. Because I'm such a klutz at things. So I do think that, and obviously some people have gone, and that's been the right thing for them to do. And they've wanted to go into central London, or and that is absolutely brilliant. And we've always seen, especially Ultrasun, as very much a nurturing environment and somewhere where people are quite safe to come in, maybe learn about the beauty industry for the first time, maybe learn about the commercial world for the first time. And some, as I say, have stayed, and some have moved on to other roles. I'm really lucky. A lot have stayed in touch. So we have a great alumni sort of group as well. And we're so proud of some of those people and what they've gone on to achieve when they maybe started with us at 20 years old, or returning to work after a family break and not really knowing where they wanted to fit in. So that's that. I'm again, I take pride in, I take pride in everything. Everyone else's success, I'll just own that as well. Good old me. So apologies, everyone else, your careers that I'm owning. But that is true. I can understand where she was coming from, but I expect it was probably maybe a little out of context, because that does sound very sort of cutthroat. And also, it's about what you enjoy. Look, some people were cut out to be in business and be constantly on the next page. When are we getting to the million? When are we getting to the 5 million? Blah, blah, blah. I have to be really honest, and this may not go down really well with everyone, so I apologize in advance. That's not me. That's not who I am. And I would be very unhappy trying to be that.
No, it's not who I
That's
am either.
not, it's just not my
It's a
comfort
lie that
place.
we are told, like with shows like The Apprentice, like, oh, it's dog eat dog and you've got to backstab and you've got to be
Yeah.
alpha
Okay. Off you
asshole.
go. You do you. But I describe myself as a business hippie. And you've got to remember, I was brought up in the 70s, and my mum was a massive hippie. And that's how, it's a really great flat playing field way of working and listening. And I think we're waking up to it more. I think we're seeing more, whether it's LinkedIn or via
Honestly,
podcasts.
the more I've gone into entrepreneurship, the more hippie I've become, like the more woo
Yes.
I've become, like the more
Yeah.
I've kind of gone into business.
Absolutely. It's a joy. It's a real joy because I can let real Abby out, and it's lovely. I don't have to be in corporate clothes. I do. There are times where I have to dress accordingly and get dressed even, but there are times, and I go on TV a lot, and obviously I need to be the right version of Abby that people will see. But what I love is my business environment feels like my home. I'm very, very comfortable here. It means I can think more clearly, I can make better decisions, I can be more honest, and my team will sometimes push me on things. I think, oh, I don't know if that's for us, or we can we do that? And they'll be like, yeah, we can, hell yeah. And I enjoy that level of vulnerability that I can show both to my colleagues but also to our customers, because I am, this is what we are. We are, our integrity, our friendship, our journey with them for life is really very, very important to us. Not just because of numbers on a spreadsheet or bottom lines, but because that's how I roll. It's the same in my friendships. I'm ridiculous about my family. Don't get me started on my children, because obviously they're the best people in the world. So that's how I am. So why leave that to go to work? Why not take some of that in? The majority of it gives me strength and power, and some of it probably does occasionally has held me back, or but I'm prepared to take that, because I can look at myself in the mirror and I can sleep at night knowing I am the real authentic Abby. And I'm not trying to build a business to sell it on or to, have loads of titles to my name or
Right.
directorship. That's not what I'm about at all. I'm sort of one of the only people, I think, in the world that saves up for things at work. We don't have credit. I know we should. I know we should. And I know everyone tells me off and like, you should borrow and you should be doing this and you should be investing. It's like, I just like to make sure that everybody's safe and secure, and that's my
Yes.
priority. There's mortgages to pay here, there's rents to pay. And that's motivates me a lot more than how I might be viewed in the business community. I don't mind. I can live with that now. I'm not trying to prove anything. And it works. And not only does it work, people are happy and fulfilled. And maybe that's why they stay. I don't know. But I just feel that genuinely, I know I sound incredibly like I'm trying to be some sort of patron saint of business. I'm really not.
Not at all.
It's
Just one
more
happy
that
person.
that's what makes me happy. So I started a business because it would make me happy, and that was my major motivation. With hindsight, I didn't realize that, but with hindsight, it is the freedom, the choice, the control, the master of your own destiny. That was really attractive to me. So I wouldn't want to try and be someone else within that business
No.
that has allowed me the freedom to be me.
No, I think having integrity and deciding what your values are and sticking to them, I think is so important. And a lot of people, I'm sorry to say, some founders, they get so kind of focused on the prize that they let that integrity slip. And they're not bad people. It's just somehow it just falls, it all falls apart in the stress and that kind of idea that you need to be ruthless. But I guess
Yeah.
if your back's to the wall, you have a choice. It is tempting to maybe, go down a certain avenue that you might not have gone down otherwise.
And I think that it's sort of what does good business look like? And of course, it depends. I mean, for a lot of people, it's about, profitability and sustainability, and how that business is performing, what it would look like to outside potential investors or buyers, or how it would be judged by the world. And you need to decide for yourself as a leader what, I know it's been overused so much, but what does good look like? What really is it? Is it profit? And it may be, and that, we need it. Don't get me wrong, we need to still be here in 2 years,
Yes.
5 years, 10 years. So absolutely, it's in there. And I'd be naive to say not, but it really is about that sustainable growth and the honesty and integrity. And in fact, I can honestly say, if anyone is listening that is on a pathway to building something with the possible hope of exiting that at some point, let me tell you, having been through that process a few times now, integrity and that real growth is so much more important, because anyone reviewing any business can see straight through sort of inflated, over rapid growth and development, sudden ways of purporting profit and reporting styles. So that, just don't even go there, don't even worry about it. Get the engine room right, have the and that's what creates a heritage brand, a brand or a business that is going to be attractive in the long run. So if that is your pathway and your journey, that's absolutely great. And there's nothing wrong with that in any way, or I'm not being judgmental in any way, but I'm saying that actually the way to get there a lot quicker is definitely through real hard graft, integrity, owning your space in whatever market you're in, rather than becoming obsessed with hitting certain targets. Because we all know that, you can inflate, they call it dressing the bride, don't they? You can inflate and change things, but anyone reviewing that will see straight through that. And what they want is what's going on, what are the nuts and bolts going on under the engine.
Exactly. There aren't any shortcuts to it, are there?
No.
And you and I remember a time before the internet where there was something called the Yellow Pages, just
Yes.
for younger listeners. So it was a book that I think we got sent it for free, or did you have to buy it? Or but that's where you found kind of, knowledge. That was Google, basically, from
Yes.
the internet days. And I love your journey about going back to the beginning, where you literally, as I understand it, bought the entire set of Yellow Pages to call pharmacies when you were building Ultrasound. I mean, that's such a brilliant origin story. Can you sort of tell me a bit more about that?
Well, I had accidentally started a business, and it was. I was at Marks and Spencer's, and I was on this high flying career, and I'd been put on an acceleration scheme. I'd done their management training, and I was going all over the place. And I thought that I loved what I did, but what I was learning is I was having to be someone else every day. I was putting on my Brooks blazer and my heels and trotting around stores, or doing big presentations about theft and loss. And don't get me wrong, I mean, it's stamped in my heart, M&S.
I worked on the tills when I was a student and I loved it there.
If
Bloody
you know, type thing,
hell.
and I will forever be grateful. I think I was there for about 8 years, and I did all their management. It
That
was
discount, my
amazing.
family ate like kings, like when
Oh my goodness, it was before they used to discount food at the end of life. It just all went in the staff shop for me. So yeah, we had dinners of smoked salmon and mashed potato. It was great. So but I found Ultrasun by accident, absolutely fell in love with the product because it was the first time I had tried a sun protection where I didn't burn, I didn't get prickly heat, I got a little bit of a tan. I only had to put it on once. It was amazing. And I couldn't get it in the UK, as you say. We had no Google, we had no internet. This was the mid-90s. And I managed to get in touch through international directory inquiries with Ultrasun in Switzerland, because that's where I'd purchased it. So I knew it was a Swiss brand. Anyway, long story short, the guy that owned it and the chemist, Tazio Tettamanti, the guy who made the first formula, had said, "Look, we've only been going for 6 months. Give us," because I was, "Why isn't it available in the UK? I need to buy this in England." And he was coming over to London for a meeting, and he said, "I'll meet you." And randomly, and again, this is before Bumble and stuff like that and Hinge. So meeting a strange guy for a coffee in London was a bit odd. But I went and met the guy, and he was so passionate. And he said to me, "You are coming alive in this discussion." He was a really amazing man. And he said, "I think you should stop doing what you're doing, and you should work with me, and I will put you through Swiss Skin School. You will learn everything,
Wow.
and you set up the business." And it was like, okay. And I agreed to it over a coffee. And it was like, okay. So I sort of went back and thought, my God, did that really happen? And you're absolutely right. I then obviously resigned at M&S and
You had a
set
family at
up.
the time as well, right? So that was sort of.
It was big. It was big. And I was sort of like, okay, this dazzling career that everyone was so proud of me, it was so bizarre. And I thought, okay, I need to start selling sun cream. How do I do that? And very much went down a pharmacy route because that's where I'd found Ultrasun in Switzerland, in one of those beautiful pharmacy stores. And it is quite a pharmaceutical background. It's absolutely sort of all about real efficacious product, UVA, UVB. It was before anyone even knew what UVA was, and we were shouting about it. Anyway, so I did. I bought your own Yellow Pages, your local one, came out to you free. But I bought, it cost me £300 to buy the UK, and I had a little library of them. They all sat on a little shelf, and I literally started, in Abergavenny, and looked up chemist, because everything was ordered by what type of business. So chemist, pharmacy, went through them all and rang every single pharmacy. And if I sold six bottles to a pharmacist, or I would get in my little old Beetle and drive, straight up the M1 to somewhere and sell six bottles of sun cream and be over the moon, because I knew once people started using it, they would appreciate everything I'd appreciated, how different it was, da da da. So that's how we started, and we grew and grew. And very soon I had to take someone on to help me pack boxes. That was Dan, who I mentioned earlier, is still with me now. And it just began. So started with pharmacy, went into department store. Department stores, the first big one really was John Lewis, and that taught me a huge lesson because it was all sale or return. And I did this order, and I went in and I presented, and she gave me an order which was for £40,000. Now, I had the biggest order I'd probably had up till then was about £600. So this was absolutely business changing overnight. And as I sat on the train, which was about a half an hour train journey from Victoria back down to Surrey, where we are, I was watching my reflection, and I was so smiling. I was like, "I've got a 40, it was in my hand, £40,000. Ah, the team are going to be so proud. Oh my gosh, this is amazing." Da, da, da. And as I started to head south, my face dropped, and I thought, "Oh my God, this is sale or return. That's about £80,000 at retail. How on earth am I going to sell £80,000 worth of sun cream this summer?" And I realized I'm just going to have to get in store. I'm just going to have to be there every weekend. And that's what I did. I spent Saturdays and Sundays in every John Lewis and Peter Jones or wherever, and talked to people and just talked about sunscreen, what they hated, what they loved. Sometimes it was pouring with rain and people laughed at me, and I got that. I understood where they were
Happy
coming
for you
from.
to go in and just be like a sales rep for John Lewis.
That's what I was doing. I was just talking to people. But do you know, it was amazing because a few years later was when we first launched on QVC, which of course is shopping telly and you're talking, but you've got no feedback. But of course, I'd banked all that feedback from those amazing John Lewis customers, all the protestations, everything from, I'm a 60-year-old bloke, I've never used sunscreen, why would I bother now? Through to, is it okay for my baby? I'm pregnant. Through to, I've got a darker skin tone, that I don't need it, do I? All of that was in my head. So when I went live on QVC, I almost knew what people might be asking in their living rooms. So
Exactly.
I
Being on
could.
the shop floor, you realize what the customers actually want. And that's why I feel like shop floor staff are just the unsung heroes of the
I
industry.
could not agree with you more. If you've done it, which obviously you have and I have, it is hard work, and I always think of it like theatre. The shutters go up in the morning, and especially perhaps with stores like M&S, people have an expectation of how they will be greeted, how they'll be served, what the overall service experience will be. And you've got to come up with that if you care
Awful.
about your job.
Yeah.
And that was what I loved about retail and still do.
Yeah.
And what I was able to carry into the business side of it, so that not only are we concentrating on making amazing product, but we are really working hard on how our customer, whether that's in a bricks and mortar store, whether that's QVC or online, however, or even on socials, however our customer is meeting us. We are there to give them information, not to hard sell, to give them information, to support their journey, to support their choices, and to help them get it right. And it may be, I always say this to the team, look, sometimes we're giving advice, and it may be that it's not ultrasound they're choosing, but they want some advice around what to choose for a new baby, or they've been diagnosed with a recent skin cancer, and they need help. That's our job. Whether they choose us or not, irrelevant. I hope they do. Of course I do. And I like to think they would because of the quality and the efficacy and all those things. But our job, as much to have our products and make sure they are brilliant, is to also help people make great choices for them.
Definitely. And your mum was also very entrepreneurial, Wendy, but she at the time was told she should find an at-home hobby. I believe that's what she was told when she asked for a business loan, but she managed to build a successful in-flight magazine empire. I mean, did that sort of watching her, did that shape your approach?
Oh, absolutely. My mum opened a shop when I was about 2 and a half. So I was predominantly brought up in a shop. Now, it was a doll's house shop. So it was for collectors.
Oh,
So those
dream
ex
as a kid growing up in that.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I wasn't allowed to touch anything, obviously. I'm probably still not, to be honest, because I'm But it was these lovely, wonderful collectors who would. I remember there was a violin, everything is done, it's called an inch to a foot because it's in old money, but basically on a 1/12 scale. So there was a violin that she had all these outworkers that worked from home. A lot of them were parents at home making the stuff she sold, and it was exquisite. There was a tiny violin, and this gentleman carved them, honestly, and they even played. And that was £100. And I'm talking about 1973 or something. So £100 then was crazy money. So this was a very expensive hobby for people with a lot of money that enjoyed collecting and having dolls' houses and all of the things that went with them. And my mum, there's a couple of things. So I grew up basically in the back room of her shop. It had no heating, it had a little coal fire. And it was a tiny little shop in Reigate. It was called Polly Flinders. And I can remember somebody came in and was a bit snippy about, I can't believe this shop makes any money. And my mum told this wonderful story. I'm old enough to remember, so I must have been about 6 or 7, where she said, well, actually, we have coach trips of people that come from America purely to come here to and this
Yeah.
lady said, do they really? And I remember when mum shut the door to her, I said, I didn't know that, mummy. And she went, oh no, we don't. I was totally trans. I said, when are the Americans coming? But within a year, we did. So within a year, she thought, actually, that's a really good idea. And she reached out, found Dolls House Societies. Anyway, so that was when I was very little. basically, it was a shop near a station, and British Rail were developing, and it was going to be knocked down, blah, blah, blah. So she had to find something else. And she realized that it was actually the marketing that had been her success in running her shop. So she went into marketing. She threw a breakfast launch, and I was there. I was taken out of school, I think I was about 11 or 12, to serve smoked salmon and pretend champagne to people. And she said to everyone, invite anyone you know in business. And one lady that she knew, I won't disclose any names for obvious reasons in a minute, was having an affair with a pilot, and she bought the pilot. And he was actually in charge
No.
of the in-flight magazine, true story. And he came to this breakfast launch. It was very 80s, big hair, big glasses, shoulder pads. And he said, do you do in-flight magazines? To which my mum, being my mum, went, yes, we do, having no idea what that meant. He said, well, ours is really boring and we like it to be a bit more flary. And so anyway, she did a draft and a dummy and got freelancers and art workers and all sorts of people in. And she won the contract, and she was awarded the contract for a year to produce the in-flight magazine for this very well-known airline of the time. And she went to the bank and said, right, I need £400 to start up this business. And they said, oh, Wendy, stick to dolls' houses and stick to all your little hobby stuff and your at-home business. This is not for you. So she went back to the airline and they lent her the money themselves.
There you go. I mean, it's so
Yeah.
funny. I still get spoken to like that as a business entrepreneur in, it's an entrepreneur in 2025, and it's still like, oh, how's your little business going? Is that
Yeah,
people still
your little
see
side
it even
hustle.
now? It's just like it just yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
And
a
I think what's really interesting, Viola, is that so we are seeing this explosion. Look, I'm mid-50s and I know I've got kids in their 20s and I know that I am out of touch. And thank goodness I have children and I can listen because they are teaching me better ways of using language, better ways of adjusting as we move forward, as society should. And I welcome it, enjoy it. Sometimes get a bit lost, but I ask and I am taught, and that's really welcome. And I think that in this new world that we live in, and as it goes on and continues, more and more people will be working in different ways to that traditional job, office, whatever. And how exciting is that? And it's we will have to change the way we almost. I hope I don't, but I'm sure that all of us do to a certain extent, that kind of judgment criteria that we have based on career or job title or and that and we're just seeing the real people. And again, going back to my business hippie roots, that is a joy because I that is exactly sometimes skills are not always qualified on a piece of paper or have had the opportunity to be proven. But when you get someone in a room and they are free to be themselves and let their inner, I don't know, it could be their inner administrator, their inner salesperson, it doesn't really matter, their inner accountant, it doesn't matter what, but when they are relaxed and free to explore that, really wonderful things happen.
definitely. Like, from my perspective, like, my attention to detail is terrible. I'm just like not good in any admin roles or any kind of, but I'm good at the big picture, the big ideas, the strategy. Give me stuff to do around that, and I'm just,
Yeah, you're in.
wham. So I think that's so true. It's like, it's just lean into what you enjoy and what, play to your strengths, as opposed to trying to, which can happen with corporate culture, can't it? You're trying to dilute yourself and fit this mold
Yes.
quite.
And well, you're often asked to be a bit of everything and yet be a bit of nothing and fit in and not have your own sense of exploring and interest, whereas which is why I think it is becoming so much more attractive to work more independently or cohesively with other independent workers, and that is quite an exciting time. And we can go for little bits of the journey. It's a bit sort of where you join each other for a bit of the walk, and that fits in that time and that moment and for that project or whatever it is. And then you're just learning all the time from different people, different styles. And it's great when you're doing that because you can take a bit of what you have enjoyed and basically rework it to be your own, steal
Yes.
it basically. And that's great. That's what we're all doing, but you're doing it outside of a framework that can hold people back.
No, I completely agree. And I think that entrepreneurship is not for everyone, but I think it's something that, you don't really get taught much in school about. It's just like, okay, so you'll have a job and that's where you'll stay for the rest of
Yes.
your life. And I don't know. Don't get me started on the school system. That's another podcast altogether, I think.
Yeah.
But going back to, so you launched Skin Sense, I believe it was 2016.
Yes.
Was that always the plan? Because that uses the same lamellar technology as the ultrasound products. Was that?
Absolutely. So it's the lamellar technology that locks ultrasound in and keeps it so sturdy, whether you're in the water or perspiring. And I love you for the question. No, it was never the plan. Never, ever. I never even, I was doing my thing. I was in ultrasound zone, and that's what I did. And more and more, I was starting to consult for some other skincare brands, makeup brands, be part of the build of new launches. I was very involved with probably, I think probably the number one selling makeup brand in the UK. But anyway, I was very involved in that element and the behind the scenes stuff. And one day I just thought, I literally came home from work. I used to wear Bare Minerals foundation, the sort of tap swirly stuff that you,
Yes, the powder.
and it had been great. But obviously I was getting a bit older and my skin was getting drier. And I looked in the mirror when I came home from work and I looked like a Terra Hawk, which is only a reference you'll know if you were born anything after about, before about 72. But basically all my lines and wrinkles were showing. And I was like, this isn't fair. I put my moisturizer on, my serum on this morning, and I thought I looked great. My skin looked great this morning, but now it's looking really dry and has been hit, beaten by the day. And I thought, God, it's so annoying because, and this was honestly the stupidity of the conversation in my head. So annoying because, like with ultrasound, that can stick in your skin right through the day, but with moisturizer. And it was like, hang on, because moisturizer predominantly evaporates quite quickly, like 2, 3 hours, depends what brand, what you're using, but it tends to evaporate quite quickly, especially if you're in fresh air, it's summertime, or you're perspiring. And I was like, hang on a minute, why don't we make hydration, anti-aging, use all these ingredients that we love in the skincare industry, like hyaluronic acid and retinols and peptides. Why don't we put them into a lamellar formulation? So it was a bit of a, it was literally a light bulb moment. I hate to use that phrase, it's so overused, but it really was like, hang on. So I went back to the labs and they all went, well, it'll be so expensive. You can't do it. You'll never do it with the margins and the retail and da, da, da. I said, well, can we just try and see what we can do and see, test it, see how long it lasts. And when we tested it, we got on the first. On the first product we made, we got something like 14 hours guaranteed efficacy, and we'd only just begun. And by the time we'd finished, we were able to lock in those ingredients, test them in vivo on the skin 24 hours later, and find that we still had something like 94% of that ingredient still locked into the skin, still working for the skin, still being ingested. So we were really excited. And that's when, and before I knew it, being me, I was like, right. What are we going to do? Let's go. Let's do this. So there was lots of trademarking and patenting and all of that sort of shenanigans going on. And then Skin Sense was born, and it was always going to be this small little brand that would sit next to Ultrasun, and maybe people that had used Ultrasun might skip into Skin Sense a little bit. But it's grown and grown. So it was not, there wasn't really even a proper business plan. It was just a thing, and that's how it would go.
I
But
love that you say, like, let's see. I think that's kind of that really stuck out for me because I think that's something that, a lot of us come up against these people say, oh, no, this can't be done, or this is too expensive, or this, that, and the other, especially women. Let's be
yes.
honest, like, there's no funding for that. And you're like, well, let's see. Let's just see. Like, not
Yeah.
saying you're wrong, but let's see. And I think that kind of, there's a
I
lot.
do have a thing, a little theory. I sometimes say if sometimes because we're in a big open plan office here, and sometimes like I'm on a hurry to get into a meeting in a little room or to get out the door, and I two or three people. And what I have this thing is if my feet keep moving, I can talk and answer questions, but my feet need to keep moving right now. And I'm a bit like that with new projects. It's like, okay, I hear your no, but I'm gonna raise you and just keep trying. I think one of the lessons I learned a really important lesson with Space NK actually. I'll just be really honest about it because I'm not gonna say anything mean or bad. When I first presented Ultrasun years ago, it looked a lot more like paint or Ronseal. It was really didn't look very attractive on the shelf. It was a bright blue label. It just didn't really look great. It was very pharmaceutical and not very attractive. And I took it to Space NK, and one of the buyers from New York was in, and she actually said to me, over my cold dead body, will those products ever go into any of my stores? And I was like,
Americans just shoot from the hip.
yeah.
Don't
And
shoot.
I was like, okay. So I don't really get where you are on this. Is that a maybe? And I came back and I decided that no was just short for not yet. They just hadn't completed the rest. It was not yet. And what we did is when we rebranded, I went back to that individual and said, "Hey, we're rebranding. I know you didn't like our previous look. Could I get your feedback on these? These are a few visuals. I'd really, really sort of be so grateful if you could just say yes or no." And she got engaged, and then we became the best-selling sun care in Space NK. So that was a wonderful example of where, from absolute hard no, we will get there, but we might just need to walk a bit of a roundabout path.
And honestly, this conversation, the time has just flown. Honestly, I can't believe we're
I
nearly.
know, I'm so sorry. I feel I've just gone all around the houses.
No,
Sorry, Pete.
not at all. But I just want to touch on something you were saying earlier that, business is personal. And I wondered what kind of personal mindset challenges you encountered as you were kind of building your career, and what were the biggest lessons in that sense that you could.
I think from my end, look, I don't want to say imposter syndrome, we talk about all the time, don't we? We hear about it all the time. I think we all have it to a certain extent. I don't know anyone that doesn't. And I think that's quite, can be quite debilitating. And what I tend to do is wholeheartedly rely on the people around me to help me and ensure I'm giving that back as well, and really working with people who might feel those insecurities and those, does anyone realize it's just me here, having a go. The other thing is, I look, through our journeys, my daughter was very ill for several years, and that, I think, heightened my awareness to everybody else's well-being as well. My team, their families, and my customers, genuinely. We never know what people are going through, and it's so easy just to assume and take on face value. And so that mantra, we've always had a mantra of wanting to help people, but talking about confidence in your skin and supporting that message, rather than where the beauty industry can be a bit bullying and can make you feel inadequate, that's something I've shied away from. Also, with very young people coming into very high sort of strength skincare, I've probably been a bit vocal in the past that I don't personally agree. I don't want young men and women or young children
Using
feeling
retinol.
that they've got to step into retinols and use the latest trend. It really worries me and it saddens me, and I won't market to children. I will market SPF for the use on children, of course I will, because that is very, very important and key, especially in those early vulnerable years of skin health. But I think that for me, we are all walking along on our business journey, potentially dragging a lot of backpacks behind us of who we might be caring for, worrying about, have lost, or and that means that I've probably welcomed the business hippie in me a little bit more than I did 10 years ago. She's very welcome in my life now, whereas maybe before I felt she might be holding me back and making me, you were talking about on that podcast that maybe there's people that should have been culled at some point, earlier in the journey, and maybe I have felt that there was a disconnect between what maybe I needed and what I should be doing and what I felt I wanted, and now I've let go of that disconnect and I go with what I feel and what is right, and I really enjoy that because that's a really good basis for all decisions. So, as everything through my daughter's battle, I've become stronger and more resilient and more able to stay in my lane and my moment. And so I'm now incredibly grateful for that. But I think it's just remembering that people have got other journeys in parallel to what you're seeing at the time.
Of course. And I feel like you can't work on your business without working on yourself. I think that's something that I've had to learn over the years. But thank you so much, Abby, for chatting with me. Honestly, I don't know where the time has gone, but I could honestly just chat to you all day.
Oh, bless your
I know you're a busy
heart.
lady, so I will let you go. Thank you so much again.
Oh, I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Viola.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.